Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
Today, we look at an old and very true saying. It's not about the money you make, but about the money you keep. There's this old joke about a guy who loses money on every sale, but he says, "I make it up in volume." No, doesn't work that way. And we're not talking about adding on backends or affiliate sales here. Things can go sideways in your business if you're not making enough sales or your profit margins are too small, or upside down, like the guy in the joke. But you've got an even bigger problem if you're making enough sales and your margins are good, but the sales don't stick. When people decide they don't want what they've bought from you and you've got tons of refunds or maybe even chargebacks. So here's the thing we're going to focus on today. You only keep the money you make when the customer decides to keep what they bought from you. And we'll really dig into how to keep more money by reducing or eliminating refunds and chargebacks. Just after you really dig this, copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear on this podcast. Most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims and if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. Okay, let's start by talking about something entrepreneurs don't like to talk about during the day, but it's something that keeps them awake at night. Buyer's remorse. One of the biggest reasons customers ask for refunds or file chargebacks, buyer's remorse. And you might be surprised to find out that this happens, at least the buyer's remorse, if not the actual refund, it happens a lot more often than you might think. According to a Google survey with Ipsos, you know, legitimate pollster, 42% of Americans have bought something and later regretted it. That's nearly half the population second-guessing their purchases. What's more important is this doesn't just happen randomly. It's wired into how our brains work after we buy something. And there's even a name for it, the dopamine drop. Think of it like a shopping hangover. Dr. Kit Yarrow, a psychology expert at Golden Gate University here in San Francisco, explains the phenomenon this way. She says that when we shop, our brains release a rush of dopamine. And of course, that makes us feel good. Dopamine is at its highest level when we hit the buy button. And that makes sense, right? When we buy, we're excited. We're hopeful. We're onto something new. But that doesn't last very long. Dopamine levels start to drop, and along with that, good feelings. What is worse, the excitement and happiness start to be replaced by a feeling of doubt. And that's when your customers start to wonder if they made the right choice. This doubt can hit hardest of all when they see their credit card statement or when a friend or family member questions their decision. Sometimes it happens when they check their bank balance, start to feel the weight of the money they spent. And here's the big surprise. At this point, your continued marketing could be making it worse without you even realizing it. If you keep sending them ads and promotions to buy other stuff after they've already bought, it can trigger even more doubts. They might feel like they paid too much, or they could start digging around the internet for internet negative reviews about your product. Or they could be checking around to find out what your competitors are offering. Another really dangerous doubt, they start to worry that they were scammed. Besides that, if they feel overwhelmed by your product, like if it's too complicated or not what they expected, that can be the final straw that pushes them towards a refund. Here's what the Google study found out about why people regret their purchases. 62% of respondents said they bought something they didn't actually need. 42% admitted they bought on impulse. 34% said they already had too much stuff at home. 19% of people found the same item cheaper somewhere else after buying. And 17% said they really didn't do enough research before making their decision. Now, that's in general. The numbers are even worse when you sell online, because a separate survey revealed that 74% of U.S. adults have experienced buyer's remorse after making an online purchase. That's 3 out of 4 people who regretted buying something online. This is especially important when you sell digital products or services. Here's an important reason why this is a bigger problem online. When someone buys a physical product, like a coffee mug that says the Persuasion Story Code on it, or the actual book, the Persuasion Story Code, physical product, they can hold it, touch it, and see it. The physical connection helps them reinforce the value of what they bought. But with digital products, it's different. The value isn't always obvious immediately because there's nothing tangible for them to hold in their hand. That's why buying online makes buyer's remorse even more likely. So what's going on? It all starts with the dopamine drop. Nature really hates a vacuum. And when you're creating an emotional vacuum, you are, when the wave of dopamine recedes. That feeling of hope and excitement kind of drifts away. It's suddenly all gone. And it's like you've opened the door for a wave of doubts to rush in. But here's the good news. You can stop this process probably before it even begins, and certainly before it spirals out of control. How? By getting your customers engaged with your product as soon as possible. And if you have a community, invite them to join it right away. But there's something even more powerful you can do. In your marketing, afterwards, stop focusing on the purchase or the price. Instead, focus on the future benefits of your product. Don't tell them what they spent. Tell them what they can look forward to. Show them how their life will improve after using it. When people imagine positive changes, they're much less likely to get stuck in a spiral of doubt. Understanding this psychology gives you a huge advantage. It helps you put together marketing messages that resonate and build confidence, which lets you create onboarding experiences that make customers feel supported. Bottom line, it helps you offer post-purchase support that keeps them satisfied. Now, this isn't just about avoiding refunds and chargebacks. That's definitely something that can happen. It's also about making your customers feel good about their decision to buy from you. So the important point is, when you understand why buyer's remorse happens, you can build safeguards into your process to prevent it. That helps you build trust and build long-term relationships with your customers. In short, that's how you keep your refund rates low while keeping your customers happy. Next, we'll talk about email techniques you can use to reduce or eliminate the sale falling apart.
So it sounds like where we're going with this episode is stuff that you can do after the purchase to make sure that you avoid buyer's remorse. One thing, though, that you did mention, and I think is important and skipped over by the vast majority of copywriters, is the opinions of people that we hold near and dear. That I imagine a husband showing his wife what he just bought, and she's like, really? You just bought another online course for that silly pipe dream of yours? Or you show your friend and they're like, dude, you paid how much for that? Or you go to your boss and he's like, do we really need that? And in the front end copy, having those, having ways for them to overcome the objections of the people around them is so important, but I almost never see it in people's copy. So that's, before we get into the back end copy, I just wanted to emphasize that point and how important it is. And yeah, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's really good. Absolutely. I think some people might even think about putting it in their copy, but they think, well, I don't want to, you know, pre-frame or suggest that there's going to be any static or objection. Well, wake up, smell the coffee. No, seriously, wake up, smell the coffee, the real world. you know, if you spend over $50 on anything, there's a good chance someone's going to have a comment to make. And if you can provide them with a reason, a rationale, and even more important, the language they can use to counter that and either win the argument or just calm the person or best of all, convince them, no, this is a really, really good purchase investment decision I made, you know, it can definitely help. So I didn't think about that when I was putting this together, but I'm glad you brought it up because that could possibly prevent more problems than everything we're going to talk about. But what we're going to talk about is going to help a lot too.
Okay, so let's jump into the post-purchase copy.
Post-purchase copy. First of all, let's talk about email ideas. Now, this isn't a, you know, rigid formula for a sequence. It's some ideas, but it's a structure that you can learn and adapt to your own situation. With emails, timing counts for a lot, all right? Because the clock starts ticking right the second someone buys from you. So your first email needs to land in their inbox quickly, ideally within 2 hours of when they bought. We could call this the ownership email. And its main job is to make your customer feel great about their decision to buy by creating a sense of ownership for what they just bought. For digital products, you might write something like, "Your new toolkit is ready. Here's your private login." For physical products, you could say, "Your order is being confirmed and prepared right now." In my own case, from e-commerce stores I've bought from in the last month, I get emails a lot like that right away. And of course, Amazon, it goes to an old AOL account I don't even look at. They'll send me an order confirmation every single time I buy something, which is too many times. Okay, so notice what all these companies are doing. They're not just reminding me that I spent money. In fact, they're not saying you just spent money. And they're not using worn out subject lines like "thanks for your purchase" or "order confirmation." And this is really important, the way you phrase it, the way it comes across, because the first email sets the tone for everything that follows. It's doubling down on their excitement while you still can. So don't fill it full of marketing hype and dreams of the future. Not yet. Keep your first email short, clear, matter of fact, and action oriented. You just want to let them know that you've received their order and are taking or have taken steps to get them what's theirs. Okay. Now, how about an email 24 hours after the purchase? Their mood's different now. For the customer, doubts might be starting to creep in. And the easiest way to defeat those doubts is by giving them a quick win, something small but meaningful they can do and accomplish and be proud of right away. For a course, you might say, "Watch the first 5 minutes of module one. That's all you need to do today." And tell them what they're going to get out of it. Maybe if it fits, what they'll be able to do right away. For a physical product, you could say, "Try this one simple thing with your new product when it arrives." The key is to make this step easy and achievable. Small wins build momentum and make your customers feel like they're making progress. And more important, small wins get them engaged. With those two emails, just the order confirmation and the small win email, you've really dampened or dissolved your two biggest problems. But there's more to do. At 48 hours after the purchase, you could change your focus to social proof. Some people will start to get big doubts at this time. So show them they're not alone. Share a story about someone who felt unsure but ended up loving your product. It doesn't have to be a massive success story. Even a small everyday example can do the trick. So that's 48 hours, 2 days. After 3 days, turn everything to undiluted positive. Acknowledge any progress they've made so far. And this would work for any kind of product, physical or digital. Remind them of the value they've already received. That is, reinforce the smart decision they made to buy from you. By day 4, start painting a picture of where they'll be in 2 weeks. This is where you start talking about future benefits, but don't go over the top here. Keep it realistic. Nobody expects miracles in 14 days, but they do want to see meaningful progress. For software, you could highlight one feature they'll be totally comfortable with and be able to get results from every time. For physical products, maybe describe one way it'll improve their life. Again, take pains to make sure it's believable and relatable. And here's a pro tip. Send your emails at the same time they originally bought. So if they bought at 8:15 p.m., that's when they're most likely to engage with your emails. And be very purposeful with the words you use. For example, instead of saying purchased, you might say invested in. Replace bought with words like chose or decided. Actually, these small word changes can make a huge difference in how people feel about their purchase. For digital products, consider calling it a system or a toolkit instead of a course for digital products. And for physical items, focus on the experience of using the item. For software, talk about solutions more than features. The key is to match your email sequence to your product and your customer's emotional journey and help them avoid the buyer's remorse pit stop altogether. Now, with some products, you need to give more step-by-step guidance early on, and others might need more long-term support. So figure out what your customer needs to feel comfortable and adjust your emails accordingly. The big goal, though, is to stay connected during those first few critical days. Think of it as walking alongside your customer. You're not selling them anymore. At this point, you're supporting their decision and showing them the value they already have. See, that's how you turn one-time buyers into satisfied and then repeat customers, and some of them into raving fans.
I really like this. We did an episode before about lead magnets, and the problem with a lot of lead magnets being that they just dump a bunch of information on you that's not actionable, and we compared it to the Super Mario Brothers game where they teach you by giving you a small little, here on the first screen you do this, and that teaches you part of the game, and then here on the next screen you do this, and this is very much like that. You give them a small win, get them feeling good about themselves, get them feeling confident. And the opposite of this, which is what most people do, is, oh, we got your money, you're on your own, but now we're holding their hand, we're helping them achieve those small wins, and now they're going into the future with a lot more confidence. And that confidence is a huge part of avoiding the buyer's remorse. If I buy into something and then all of a sudden I'm overwhelmed with doubt, I get buyer's remorse. If I buy something and I'm overwhelmed with confidence and I've got somebody there holding my hand, now all of a sudden you have eliminated that buyer's remorse for me.
Right. And understand, you know, you don't have to become their best buddy or their high school soccer coach or anything. I mean, you don't have to be there all the, you know, it's more the attitude of a few choice interactions through email and, you know, what you're focused on and how you're helping them shape their view and their experience of what they bought. Yeah. Okay. So now we're going to drill down even more to talk about some of the words you use after someone buys. We've already done that a little bit, but I want to go a little deeper because this is where many businesses make mistakes. And of course, we mentioned words like purchase, buy, and spend can actually remind people they just parted with their money. And when they're already second guessing their decision, those words can make things worse. Instead, try using words that focus on what they've gained, not what they've spent. Words like access, resources, and opportunity shift the focus to the value they've received. Just this one simple change in language makes a huge difference in how your customers feel about their decision. Let's review why this is so crucially important in the first few days. Because in the first few days is when people are most vulnerable to doubt and regret. If your messaging reinforces those doubts, you'll lose them. But if it reassures them, then you'll keep them engaged and satisfied. So let's look at some simple examples of how small word changes can create a big impact. Instead of saying start the course, try something like begin your training. Instead of you bought the program, try something like you joined the system. See the difference? The first phrases focus on the transaction, which reminds people of the money they spent. The second focuses on the value, and they now have access to something valuable. And I just thought of a famous Warren Buffett quote, price is what you pay, value is what you get. Focus on what they get. This kind of small shift actually changes the entire tone of your communication moving forward. Think about your follow-up messages as a set of stepping stones. Each message gives your customer a sense of moving forward. For example, you could say, you've already taken the toughest step by deciding to improve your skills. This acknowledges their decision in a positive way. It frames the purchase as progress, not just as a transaction. Any thoughts about that before we move on?
No, I'm loving this. I realize that I use a lot of this stuff in my pre-purchase copy, but now I'm looking at a lot of the stuff that I do post-purchase, and I'm like, man, I know it intuitively before the purchase, but why am I not using this after the purchase?
I bet there are some other people like that too, because this is an area, the big companies get this. This is one thing where the really big, not the super huge corporations, but the big e-commerce companies do get this. But a lot of us are not as focused on it. So I'm glad it's giving you some new ideas. All right, let's talk about implementation language. This is where you guide your customers towards action in a way that feels empowering, not overwhelming. Instead of saying, download your materials. Okay, I did change my voice tone a little bit to emphasize it. Try something like, your implementation checklist is ready. Instead of, here's your login, say, you're on your way. Small tweaks like these make the process feel exciting and purposeful. On day one, focus on showing customers that others started in the exact same place they are now. You don't need to have massive success stories. All you need are relatable stories of people who faced the same doubts but took small steps forward. On day two, bring in what you could call the worried but won stories. And these are examples of people who felt uncertain at first but stuck with it and saw results. These stories don't need to be dramatic. And remember, this is hard for us as marketers because we're used to making these big claims and having these grand headlines and these fantastic testimonials. But you need to be flexible. Here, it's better not to do that. It's better to have something that just feels real. By day three, you might try almost quit, but glad I didn't stories. And these hit differently because they speak to the thoughts your customers might be having right now. They show that it's okay to feel unsure, but sticking with it pays off. This is where you can really tap into the psychology of commitment. People naturally want to stay consistent with decisions they've already made. They value what they've invested time in, and they're more likely to stick with something if they see themselves making progress. Your copy should tap into these natural tendencies. Think about progression. Start with something like, your quick start guide has been prepared. Then move to, your first milestone is already within reach. And later, you're building momentum. Each message reinforces their decision. Each line nudges them forward. You're setting up a frame where the thought of asking for a refund feels like stepping backwards. But notice it's not heavy-handed. You're not doing this through guilt or pressure. You're doing it by showing them the progress they're making and the possibilities ahead. When people see themselves moving forward, they're much less likely to reverse course. And your words are creating that forward motion. But remember to keep it grounded in reality. Nobody transforms overnight, not anything that sticks. Focus on small wins and steady progress. Think of it like building a foundation, brick by brick. Each positive message adds another layer of confidence and satisfaction. And finally, let's talk about using words that suggest permanence. Personalizing terms tends to create a sense of ownership. For example, instead of saying the portal, try saying your private portal. Instead of saying the dashboard, say your dashboard. Instead of saying the toolkit, say your toolkit. Do you notice the difference? Just by personalizing, it makes your customer feel like what they bought from you is truly theirs. And who wants to give up what is truly theirs? What's great about this approach is that it's subtle. You're not beating a drum or jumping up and down. You're just helping them see the value they now have. And when your customers feel like they're making progress and building something that's theirs, they're much more likely to stick to it.
I'm going to add on to something that you mentioned. You mentioned, here's your quick start guide. And if you're selling a physical product that's going to take 4 or 5 days to get there, having something like that come in my email, and it's just a digital add-on, and it's like, hey, before it gets there, here's what you can do to start getting results right now. Again, that just helps me feel more empowered. A lot of this feels like after they've made the purchase, now they've walked into a dark room, and there's Legos that they could step on. There's a couch they could stub their toe on. And what we're doing here is we're turning on the lights for them and taking away that fear, that anxiety that comes between purchase and the arrival of the product. And that is just, you mentioned earlier, a lot of this is about psychology. Anxiety will lead to buyer's remorse. But if we turn the light on for them, we alleviate some of that anxiety. We give them, and I just love the quick start guide, especially if it's a physical product. Before it gets there, I get something that helps me feel confident, helps me take a couple of action steps and gets me moving in the right direction. Man, all of this has just been gold. And I'm just, as you're talking, I'm just thinking of, for my clients, all the different ways that I can be implementing this stuff that I haven't been yet.
Cool. All right, well, let's do a quick recap and then we're out of here. Section one, we talked about why buyer's remorse happens. And we learned about the dopamine drop, the chemical crash that happens after the excitement of buying fades. And also some surprising stats. 42% of Americans regret their purchases on average, with 74% of online purchases being regretted. We explored the reason behind this regret, from impulse buying to fear of being scammed. Section two, we talked about how to use emails to reduce buyer's remorse. We talked about the importance of timing, starting with the ownership email within 2 hours of purchase. We discussed how to use small wins, social proof, and progress markers to keep customers engaged. And we covered the importance of building a community by day five. Section three, we focused on the words you use after someone buys. We learned how small language changes, like replacing purchase with access, can shift the focus to value instead of cost. We talked about using implementation language to guide customers through action. And we explored how ownership language and progress messaging work together to build confidence and satisfaction. When you put all of these strategies together, you create an experience that keeps customers happy and engaged. And that's how you stop refunds and chargebacks before they even start.
I'm going to add one last note to this, and it's a little bit off topic, but in your copy before the sale, make sure that copywriters, marketers, salespeople, we like to pride ourselves on, oh, I could sell ice to an Eskimo, if I'm still allowed to say that. But shouldn't be doing that. We should be in our copy, in our sales process, we should be making sure that what we're selling is the right thing for the right person. We should be making sure that we're not selling something to people that they're going to regret later. Just that alone will stop chargebacks. And when you're not selling the wrong thing to the wrong people, when you're not influencing people to make a purchase that they're going to regret later, those negative reviews that you talked about earlier, they don't show up. But when you sell people something and you're so persuasive and your copy's so good that you get people who shouldn't really be buying it, but you get that money anyways, that's how you get all of those negative reviews and that's how you get all of those chargebacks. So that's also something to keep in mind.
Really good points. And I mean, the only thing I can think of is if you're planning to step too far over the line, think into the future in one word, Reddit.
There you go. All right, man. a fantastic episode and a lot of stuff for me to chew on and start implementing for my business and for my clients. So thank you so much for putting this together, David.
Very cool. You're welcome.
All right. And if you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, you can get a whole bunch of other episodes over at copywriterspodcast.com, as well as the show notes for this episode. So head on over to copywriterspodcast.com. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
This is the Copy and Funnels Podcast Network.